Today is May 19th, 2008, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, episode number 126, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, morning editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/AWR. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note, bang, 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 at awr@macobserver.com.
You have a new gun.
Or something.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out what caliber your fingers are today.
Oh, good Lord. Why do people not write us and tell us what idiots we are? Why?
Because they know it wouldn't do any good. It's too late for us.
You know, we did get a note, by the way. I meant to mention this last week, but we did get a note asking us to turn off the reverb. I accidentally had a little bit too much reverb two episodes ago. It was a mistake and not intended, and we appreciate the gentle reminder or gentle note that that wasn't the best thing to do.
Yeah, so hooray for listener feedback. That's awesome.
Indeed. Indeed. How are you doing this week?
I'm doing pretty good. I think more importantly is, hey, how about that California weather, Brian?
Hot.
Hot.
Hot. Now, it's no hot garbages, but it's
hot.
No.
And by the way, I am looking forward to hearing Hot Garbage's first album after they get in the studio.
Hi, I'm Chandler Bing, and these are the Hot Garbages.
I'm really looking forward to that. Oh, and just so you know, the weather here in Colorado, it got pretty hot today.
Like, yeah, what'd you spike out there, buddy?
81.
80, oh, well, actually, dude,
I had to turn on the AC.
I think we beat you, man. I don't think we got above 80.
Yeah, well, a few days ago, though, you were pretty much just a hot box.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I remember when I was a kid, there were a couple of heat waves in the 80s, in like up in the Chicago area and in New York City. And people were dying, and the newscasters were talking about as the weather got up into the 80s and 90s. And wow. And I was in Texas at the time, and, you know, we were seeing 101, 105, 106. And I'm thinking, like, how do you people die in the 80s and 90s? And I just didn't, I was a kid, I didn't understand that.
Not everyone had an air conditioner?
Yeah, exactly. I'm in Texas. I thought, you know, everyone's got an air conditioner. Just turn the damn thing on.
Right.
And of course, it didn't work that way. When you're living in a place that where it never gets hot, no one has any air conditioners, and buildings aren't anyway. I'm belaboring the point, but heat is definitely a relative thing depending on where you are.
You know, and the way the weather was the past few days in San Francisco makes it totally understandable why people would go into a school to learn how to be an IT manager. It's because they're the people that can open up the door and go and sit inside the always air-conditioned server rooms.
Indeed. All right. Well, I guess the point is that it's been hot out on the West Coast. Looks like you're warming up, too. We hope that wherever you are, that you have been comfortable and that the climate has been tasty.
Not only tasty, but reverb-free.
Reverb-free and tasty. And with that, let's do the news.
On the rise, the iPhone's worldwide reach is growing by leaps and bounds, and O2 says new iPhone models are just around the corner. Intel explains away what looked like a new iPhone technology leak. Microsoft is bringing Office Visual Basic scripting back to the Mac. The iTunes Store added two-tier pricing. Yahoo was hit with a surprise proxy battle, and not from Microsoft. And Steve Jobs will be speaking to a sold-out crowd at WWDC. This week's quick tip, working with Dictionary's Panel View.
I so tried to shortchange the riff. Let's start with the top news. Apple's Mac market share is on the rise and managed to take 66% of the market for computers over $1,000 US, with the important caveat of those being computers sold at US retail stores. According to data from NPD Group, looking at the entire computer retail store market, in other words, adding in those cheap PCs that cost less than 1,000 bones, the research firm said the Mac has some 14% of the market. Adding insult to injury, NPD also noted that Apple laptops were growing at twice the rate of their boring Windows-oriented compatriots. Stephen Baker, NPD's vice president of industry analysis, commented, quote, "iMacs are growing and the Windows desktop ain't." No matter how you look at it, Apple is outperforming Windows, unquote. NPD's statistic represents only a small part of the overall PC market, but it's still an indication of the Mac's growing popularity, especially in a market where other PC makers are seeing a drop in sales.
And Orange is moving its iPhone reach beyond France thanks to a new multi-country deal with Apple that was announced on May 16th. The agreement will make Orange the official iPhone carrier in Austria, Belgium, the Dominican Republic, Egypt, Jordan, Poland, Portugal, Romania, Slovakia, Switzerland, and Orange's African markets, and that's all going to happen before the end of 2008. Now, staying true to form with all of the other recently announced iPhone partnerships from other reaches of the world, Orange is not elaborating on other terms of the deal, what customers will pay, or exactly when the rollout will happen. Other carriers that have announced iPhone deals in the past few weeks include Vodafone, Rogers, and American Mobile.
It's American Mobile, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's American Mobile. Wow, me and my consonants. I guess I need to work on that.
We should have caught that in the run-through. Sorry about that, folks. The Swiss cell carrier Swisscom joined the ranks of the above-mentioned carriers on Wednesday with the announcement that it has signed a deal with Apple to offer the iPhone in Switzerland. Like the carriers in other countries, Swisscom is only saying that the iPhone will be available later this year.
And O2's parent company, Telefonica Europe, may have dropped a hint at Apple's iPhone plans. That happened when CEO Matthew Key said that his company will be making a joint iPhone announcement with Apple in the quote-unquote coming weeks. The revelation came after O2's first quarter earnings announcement. That was on May 14th. In response to a question about when Apple's 3G-compatible iPhone would ship, Mr. Key said, quote, "That's more of a question for Apple, but over the coming weeks, we'll do a joint announcement with Apple as Telefonica Group," unquote.
Unclear on the concept of secrecy.
Clearly. Now, the iPhone rumor mill has churned out reports that the iPhone is going to include the faster 3G wireless data networking, video chat support, streaming movie support, a built-in GPS, and a whole slew of other things. I'm assuming that includes bottle openers, can openers, and full body massage. Apple is sticking by its standard policy, however, and is not commenting on any of the new iPhone features.
Well, because that appears to be the job of their partners these days.
Exactly.
Following a CNET report that Apple will be using the Intel Atom chipset in the next iPhone, Intel has stepped up to say it ain't so. The chipmaker claimed that one of its executives had been misunderstood and was simply using the iPhone as, you know, an example of the type of device that could use Atom should they choose to, which isn't necessarily the case, don't you know? Intel spokesman Mike Cato told ZDNet.de, that's the German version of that, quote, "Intel knows nothing about future products of other manufacturers and can therefore about it also nothing say." Is that an actual quote?
That's an actual quote. However, it's an actual quote that's been munched through Babelfish going from German to English.
So we can assume that it made more sense in German.
I would hope so. All right, Microsoft dropped Visual Basic for Applications when it released Office 2008 for the Mac, but now it plans to bring the macro scripting language back with the next version of its Office application suite. Now, many longtime Office for the Mac users discovered that their documents containing macros broke after moving to Office 2008. While Microsoft enhanced AppleScript and Automator support in the new version of its suite, many VBA macro users found that their documents failed to function properly and ultimately required rewritten scripts. The limitation also meant that documents that rely on VBA macros were no longer cross-platform compatible. Microsoft did not offer a time frame for the release of the next version of Office for the Mac, but considering that the current version was released only a few months ago, it's likely VBA scripters will have to wait at least another year.
billionaire investor Carl Icahn thinks Yahoo, quote-unquote, completely botched Microsoft's unsolicited buyout offer and is mounting his own attempt to take over the search and internet advertising company's board in an effort to get Microsoft back to the table. Why, we don't know. Yahoo, however, apparently thinks Mr. Icahn needs to get his ducks in a proper row before lobbing stones at them, as they accused him of having a, quote-unquote, significant misunderstanding of the facts. Adding in, he added a, quote, a fair-minded review of the factual record leads to one conclusion, that Yahoo's 10-member board, comprised of 9 independent directors along with Yahoo CEO Jerry Yang, remains the best and most qualified group to maximize value for all Yahoo stockholders, adding in another. Mr. Icahn, however, isn't so sure Yahoo is on the right track. Quote, it is quite obvious that Microsoft's bid for $33 per share is a superior alternative to Yahoo's prospects on a standalone basis, he said.
Now, to help drive that point home, Mr. Icahn has formed his own 10-member proxy board in an effort to oust Yahoo's current board in hopes of bringing Microsoft back to the negotiating table. The proposed roster includes Mr. Icahn, of course, and a host of internet and media CEOs. While Mr. Icahn seems ready to move forward with his plan, there's no indication that Microsoft is on board. The Redmond-based company walked away from the negotiating table after deciding that the deal no longer made fiscal sense. And Mr. Icahn has pushed company mergers through in the past, though in this case, Yahoo appears to be standing firm with a middle finger firmly raised in salute.
You know, I'm gonna just claim credit for that line. I wrote it. I love it.
And I totally said it with a straight face.
You did. You did. Indeed. One more thing. Did we mention that Microsoft and Yahoo turn out to be back in talks again anyway? This time, however, it's not a full buyout, but rather a partial buyout plan. Big Redmond is apparently willing to settle on a partial stake in the company in a deal that would leave Yahoo intact. We propose that we all hold our collective breaths until this becomes interesting. All right, I give up.
Yeah, me too. My lips are already turning blue. It's getting what NBC asked for as it makes its first appearance at the iTunes Store. The studio is the first such to offer its programming on the U.S. iTunes Store with a multi-level pricing structure. Sex and the City, The Wire, and Flight of the Conchords can be purchased at the traditional $1.99 per episode price, but the super hit and mega expensive to produce The Sopranos, Deadwood, and Rome will all cost a dollar more. Multi-level pricing is new to the U.S. iTunes Store and could be a sign of things to come. Should the new pricing scheme prove successful, Apple may find that other content providers start asking for similar deals.
Like they already have.
Oh, right, right.
Steve Jobs is scheduled to give his customary keynote presentation at Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference, or WWDC, in June, where analysts expect he will announce the highly anticipated second-generation iPhone with support for 3G wireless data networks. Analysts like Piper Jaffray's Gene Munster are backing that up, too, by speculating the current low iPhone inventory levels indicate, quote, that the release of a 3G iPhone is imminent, unquote. Apple also revealed that this is the first WWDC to sell out since it first began holding the annual event in 1983. Presumably, since last year's event hosted more than 5,000 attendees, this year's event will include even more. While Apple isn't saying what Mr. Jobs will talk about during his presentation, it's safe bet to say he will discuss the iPhone software developer program, the status of the App Store, and plans for macOS 10. And that sound means it's time for the Context Machine, where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on.
Yeah, that's exactly what we do. All right, so what I'm wondering, Brian... Mm-hmm. What do you think of all these iPhone deals that have been popping up over the last couple weeks?
Well, it shows that Apple can actually get its collective butt into gear when they need to. I mean, that's the most interesting thing about this. I mean, first of all, it is so obvious that this is all being done in preparation for a 3G iPhone.
Yeah, that seems pretty clear to me.
I mean, it's just obvious. And it's also obvious that what's been holding Apple back out of a lot of markets has been the lack of a 3G iPhone. Right? That's just
Yes, that's absolutely correct.
Just logical sense. So, to me, I mean, it's interesting to see how many multi-country deals are being made, and you know, it's just Apple has had to shift gears, and they've been able to do it. And you know, quite frankly, that's you know, as a tiny Apple shareholder, that's good. I'm glad that Apple can be flexible.
You know, yeah, I think that's a great thing. Now, I find it interesting that as of this point in the game, Apple has, or various companies have announced deals with Apple that will bring the iPhone to like another 40 countries.
Mm-hmm.
My concern is, will Apple be able to manufacture enough iPhones to meet demand, knowing that there will be delays along the way, but will they be able to meet demand without having a relapse to the same type of problems they had back in the, was it in the 90s, when they just simply couldn't get product out?
Yeah, it's like they either had too much or not enough of anything. But, you know, it's been so long since we've had those problems. Apple's got a pretty consistent track record on being able to meet demand of late. You know, the few exceptions to that have been so minor in comparison to the major problems that they did have in the late 90s.
You know, I'm hoping that you are absolutely correct, because that would be a good thing for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just holding my breath, not quite as much as I was earlier in the podcast, but holding my breath, waiting to see if, because of the number of countries Apple will most likely be doing a simultaneous rollout in, will there be enough phones to go around?
And yeah,
you know, for that, we'll have to wait and see.
Imagine that there will be. I'm guessing that Apple is being a little less hands-on with all of these new deals, and that they're actually going to let their partners take care of the markets that they know better than Apple does. I'm admittedly pulling that with very little information, but the fact that Apple is making so many multi-country deals at one time, you know, focusing on making a deal with a carrier for a region instead of a deal with a carrier for a market.
Right.
You know, that says to me that they're just – that at some point someone has realized they need to sort of let go at least a little bit.
Yeah. You know, it makes sense, and it doesn't matter if it's Apple or – any other company, but if you're teaming up with another company to roll out a new product or service, make sure that each side handles the part that they're the best at.
Right. You know, and that's not something that Apple's necessarily all that great at.
Right. But it looks like maybe they're actually taking that kind of a path with this new rollout.
Mm-hmm. It does. But anyway, the long and the short of it is that 3G iPhones clearly on the way. Clearly.
Right. Which means that my original predictions of a June announcement and September launch are probably flat out wrong. And so now I'm thinking maybe we're looking at early June announcement, which would be at the Worldwide Developers Conference, followed by an end of June launch.
Yeah, and maybe even pretty close to that time. Maybe not even end of June.
Yeah. So
I mean, we're talking about now. I mean, if it's at the end of June, we're really looking at 6 weeks without sales.
And that's kind of a creepy thing.
Yeah, that's a little bit that would be pretty bad management on Apple's part, with inventories having run out, is what I mean by that. So.
Right.
Actually, and it's closer to 2 months without sales. So I don't know. I think it'd be pretty close after the announcement. We'll just have to see.
Yeah, I guess so. And since Steve is not returning my calls, call me Steve. Hello. I can't get the inside scoop.
Indeed. It's kind of funny how that works. Hey, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk about would be the MPD group information.
Yeah, I think that sounds like a good thing to throw in the mix.
Sure.
Because it's interesting to look at that and see that we have Apple gaining market share with the Macintosh computer in a market where other PC makers are having a hard time selling product.
And in a market where Apple used to just suck, and we're talking about the retail store market.
Right, right. And of course, now Apple has their very successful retail stores,
mm-hmm.
and they have partnerships with other companies. And so it's easy to go find a place to walk in, buy a Mac, and walk back out.
And apparently lots of folks are doing that. And it's even more interesting that, you can read this information about them having 66% of the market for computers over $1,000. You can look at that at two ways. One, Apple is crushing that market, or two, that market is just, going away anyway. That the only people who are buying, and this is actually true, 2-to-1, that the only people buying $1,000 computers are people buying Macs.
Yeah. One thing that kind of fits into that whole people buying over $1,000 Macs. Keep in mind that the Mac is still the dominant player in the graphic design and creative arts industries. And in many cases, the types of computers people need in those markets are going to fall in that above $1,000 price range.
Yeah, but I don't have any evidence for this, but I don't really think that those are the computers being sold through the stores. I would imagine that most graphics folks are ordering their computers online. Wouldn't you think?
All right. Well, in my experience, a lot of graphic designers order their computers online. But with the advent of the Apple Store, I know a lot that go into the stores now so that they can get that one-on-one, hands-on mm-hmm. treatment that they'd like to go along with their purchase.
Mm-hmm.
So, you're probably right in that there are more Macs sold to designers online or through mail order than in the Apple stores. But, I think those numbers are climbing.
Yeah, could be. I definitely think that it's interesting how lost my train of thought. That's so lame. But I was going to bring up yet again that Apple is one of three companies making money off of computer sales, and that's Microsoft, Apple, and Dell is one of four companies. That no one's making any money off these things because everyone has just, toastered themselves out of their profits, except Apple.
Yeah, how about that? Yeah. Here's another thing to throw into that above $1,000 price point that NPD had, which is that the iMac can be had for just over $1,000, which throws it into that higher price bracket for their statistics. And it's a popular computer. And if we take it back to the whole graphic design thing, the new iMacs that are out have enough horsepower to be a perfectly usable graphic design workstation for a lot of people.
Absolutely.
So, it may be that a lot of these designers, instead of buying the $2,500 Mac Pros, are going for a $1,700 iMac.
Very possible. Very possible. All right, well, let's move on to the HBO iTunes deal.
Yeah, how about that? We finally have multi-level TV show pricing in the United States at iTunes.
Yeah, kind of what NBC was demanding. Well, it's one of the things NBC was demanding. NBC was also demanding to be able to sell some shows as package-only, bundled-only packages.
Right. Now, I have to wonder if NBC had been willing to just completely drop the package thing, if Apple would have gone for a multi-level pricing with them.
I wonder. I mean, you notice that HBO is doing $2.99, which our longtime listeners will remember that I've always said that Apple could have started this off at $2.99 and no one would have batted an eye.
Maybe that means someone at HBO listens to our podcast.
Oh, I'm sure, actually, that someone at HBO listens to our podcast. That's beside the point.
Dude, you're a market trendsetter.
That I am. The but NBC was looking for like $4.99 a show for some shows, or
right.
up to that, supposedly.
Right, and that's just too much.
That is too much. Yeah. So, basically Apple has given HBO what NBC asked for, at least some of what NBC asked for. And, you know, does this mean that there's more negotiating room for those two companies to come back to the table? I'd like to see that happen. I would like to see NBC come back to iTunes. I think that both companies benefit from that.
I definitely think both companies benefit from that. Now, the trick will be to see if NBC would be willing to agree to a deal like HBO has, where they have a two-tier pricing system and they say these shows are at this price point and these shows are at this price point.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of got the impression that NBC was hoping to be able to take shows all over that price spectrum window they had created, and I'm wondering if they also wanted to be able to change prices on the fly.
I doubt that.
Like, this show's selling really well, so let's charge more for it.
I doubt that. That'd be crazy.
I hope that you're right. Well, it would be crazy, but we're talking about this whole media industry that's been kind of crazy for years anyhow.
Well, that's true. The crazy is as the labels and studios do.
There you go.
Speaking of which, my band's going to be looking for a record label soon. Call me.
I can't believe we did two Call Me jokes. Well, unplanned in the same show.
Mine was definitely intended as an extension of yours.
Yeah, that was fantastic. Man, you'd think that we had actually planned that, but really, it was two totally impromptu jokes.
It did occur to me recently, though, just how much I trash talk all the labels, and you know, here I'm, we're my band is in the process of actually recording music that we do intend to shop around. So, you know, kind of funny.
It is funny, and you know, so who knows? Maybe at some point people will be able to type your name into the iTunes store and come up with more than podcasts.
Yeah, maybe. We'll have to see about that. That wasn't my point. My point, though, was just the whole label issue. So I don't think HBO is going to have a problem selling any episodes at $2.99. I think that $2.99 is totally a fair price point for TV shows anyway. Again, compare the cost of producing a single and the cost of producing an hour-long drama. I mean, like,
yeah,
Rome, they were spending millions and millions per episode of Rome, which is why Deadwood got cut to four seasons, because they wanted to spend that money on Rome.
Yeah.
It doesn't cost millions to produce a single. Guarantee it. It costs thousands.
You know, yeah, you're right. Now, I wonder, though, if iTunes Store customers would be cool with the $2.99 for an episode of Rome. I mean, I totally get that. That makes sense. Would they be okay with the $2.99 episode of like some sitcom that has like a super low budget? Or would customers look at that and go, you know, no, that's too much for that kind of a show?
I don't think that many customers, many people who are buying television shows on iTunes, I don't think many of them are thinking to themselves, well, is this worth it based on how much I know the show costs to produce? Because I don't really think most people are thinking about that anyway.
So
I mentioned that simply from a, you know, from like a business analyst analysis of the issue and why it is that the studios might want more for some shows. I mean, the real deal, I think, from NBC was that they wanted to be able to gouge customers for the popular shows.
Yeah, and you know, that's kind of uncool.
It is kind of uncool. It's kind of the market at work. I mean, you'll notice, for instance, that Flight of the Conchords, The Wire, and Sex and the City. Let's look at those three shows that will be available at $1.99. Sex and the City is no longer new.
Right.
It was not a cheap show to produce, but it's no longer new, and you know, it's not a huge market for selling that show. Let's look at The Wire. Very critically acclaimed, but not a mega hit. Flight of the Conchords, not only cheap, but not a mega hit. So now let's look at The Sopranos, mega hit. Deadwood, a big hit. Rome, also a pretty big hit.
Right, and here's an interesting little point. Of the three $2.99 per episode shows, only one is still really in production, because they've totally wrapped up everything for Deadwood, right?
Yeah, Deadwood's gone. There may, in theory, be a 2-hour movie at some point, or a miniseries even, but I don't think that's going to happen, unfortunately.
Okay, so at this point, it's safe to say, at least for now, Deadwood is a dead show,
mm-hmm.
just like Sopranos.
Mm-hmm.
So two of the three $2.99 shows are actually no longer in production.
Well, that's true. Actually, that's a good counterargument to what I was making.
Hey, yeah, you know, I'm trying to keep you on your toes.
But Deadwood and The Sopranos were both, or The Sopranos was certainly way bigger than Sex and the City. And
right.
Deadwood is a lot newer than Sex and the City. So anyway, it's definitely the market at work. I just think that NBC, it seemed like NBC wanted to take that to some extremes, and this is some extremes that Steve felt weren't going to jive with the iTunes business model.
And I think Steve was right.
I think he was probably right. But I do think that that $2.99 is definitely a price point that's workable.
You know, I agree. I think it is it's a reasonable price point, especially considering how much it costs to produce certain shows.
Yep.
Yeah, and what I'm hoping is that this is not the first step towards allowing the studios to have too much control over pricing of shows, where they start doing things like jacking up a price as a show becomes popular.
Mm-hmm.
That would be test sex or.
That would be, and I could see studios wanting to do that, so we'll just have to see. And, you know, the last thing I wanted to talk about in the context machine was this Yahoo icon business. What do you think about that?
Oh, wow. Okay. So here's what I think. I think Icon is, in this case, not looking far enough into the future, and he's looking at what the returns will be over the next couple quarters and not over the next few years. And I think in the short term, having Microsoft totally absorb Yahoo would be a financial benefit to Microsoft and in the short term, potentially a cash cow. However, in the long term, that would fizzle out because I don't think Microsoft can properly manage the Yahoo assets. Now,
no, not even a little bit.
Yeah. So now to throw Microsoft back into the mix, because Icon apparently didn't go to Microsoft and say, hey, I'm going to do this. What do you think? He just did it and then was hoping Microsoft would come to the table. I think Microsoft has a bunch of really shrewd people on staff that went, dude, look what this Icon guy just did. We now have leverage. We can go back to Yahoo and say, okay, tell you what, we don't want to buy you out, but we want to buy the most important assets from your company. And so we want to take those things. Now, let's go to the table and talk.
They're buying a stake, not assets.
Yeah, but, you know, that. Well, we'll see, you know, because we still have this kind of mysterious thing around what all is happening, because they haven't given us all the details yet. So, you know, so Microsoft wants a chunk of Yahoo in one form or another.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they're using the possibility or the potential of Icon being able to get his board in place and then force a full buyout to get Yahoo back to the table and say, all right, so now here's the terms we're giving you. Take this, or we're going to let Icon do his thing, and then we'll just come in and take what we want anyhow.
Yeah, maybe. I don't really know where Icon's coming from in the first place. Like, putting together a proxy board hoping that that'll bring Microsoft back to the table, that just seems wacky to me. Now, that said, Mr. Icon has a long history of massive success, and he probably knows what he's doing.
He's pushed through some pretty big mergers.
He has. I think this one, though, it's not going to happen. I think he will be stymied.
You know, on one hand, I look at this and I say, not going to happen, because this is the wrong deal for him to be pushing through. But on the other hand, he does have a strong track record of being able to push through mergers that other people thought wouldn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of on the rail. I'm hoping it doesn't happen, but, you know, I'm thinking that there's a good chance that if anyone could just ramrod this through, it's probably Carl Icahn.
It's true. That's a good point. All right. Well, let's move on to the quick tip, and then we'll close it out.
I think that sounds like a good plan. All right, so today's quick tip, or this week's quick tip, is about dictionary and dictionary's panel view. Now, by default, if you select text in a document and then control-click and choose lookup in dictionary, it launches a dictionary application. If you'd rather have that launch the dictionary panel, which comes up quicker and is a nice little sleek interface, of course you can always do Command-Control-D, but you can also change dictionary's default behavior so that it automatically brings up that panel instead of launching the application. And here's how you do that. First, you need to launch dictionary, which is hiding in your applications directory. Then you go to the dictionary menu and choose preferences. And then you click the Open Dictionary Panel radio button. And now, anytime you select a word in a document, control click and choose Open in Dictionary, it will then bring up that little panel instead. So you don't even have to worry about the keyboard shortcut.
Very handy. Yet another excellent quick tip. I love the quick tip series, man.
Hey, it's fun to do, and you know, I'm just trying to find ways to make your life easier, Brian.
All right. Well, if you are wanting more information, including screenshots and some very specific step-by-step instructions, you can find the link in the show notes.
Yes, you can.
Yes, you can.
And if you have anything to comment on, add a question, send your audio or text comments to awr@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. Thank you, CashFly.
Thanks, CashFly.
Boom, recorded for TMO, and that's all this week.
Sorry, I didn't mean to throw your stride off. Okay, and as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com.